The title of this lecture is, What's Ahead for the Economy? There's one question of importance facing all the countries of the world at the present time. Just which way will the world and regional economies be heading in the next few years? In the main, there is an ominous prospect being expressed among most economists, while a few see very rosy times ahead of us. What really concerns us and all other individuals in the world, really, is what does this mean for us? What are the personal effects that the world and local economies could have on us as individuals? To many of our friends at FBR, the Foundation for Biblical Research, and that would mean all of you listening to this lecture on this tape, the economy is having, or has been having, a disastrous effect. That is on many, or some. Some have been without work for 6 months, a year, or even longer. And while most are still working, still, we know that there are very precarious times, it seems like, just ahead of us, maybe. Now, we're told that there's going to be an upswing in the economy very soon. But still, when we look around us, we wonder if that will be the case. In actual fact, there are some who are saying that if there is not a turnaround soon, the prospects of losing our jobs may be a distinct possibility. Clearly, the economy is a subject which should concern us all, and that is why we thought it prudent to address the matter at this time. Now, first of all, at the beginning of this lecture, let me tell you that I, Ernest L. Martin, am not a professional economist. However, I am a historian. I have taught the subject for many years in college, and I've had to have my attention on historical matters, even of a prophetical way, as far as the Bible is concerned. And as director of the Foundation for Biblical Research for the past 8 years, it's been very expedient for me and our staff here to keep our eyes on what is happening in the world, not only in economics, but in politics and everything of that nature. Many of you are very interested to know what the Bible has to say about the end of the age and about the prophecies associated with the second coming of Christ. And those prophecies, or certainly the second coming, has not occurred yet, and we are trying to keep our minds on the developments in the world today in all spheres of activities to be able to appraise what is occurring and to try to share some of these things with you, and that you can share with us as well, so that we can all grow in the grace and knowledge of God. So for the past 8 years as director of the Foundation for Biblical Research, it's been very important for all of us on the staff here, and me in particular, to have an interest in the economic situations that are developing or have been occurring in the world. And to understand prophecy and the various prophecies of the Bible, it requires a comprehension of the basic concepts of economics. I think this is well understood by all of us. So this is a subject that is constantly under our scrutiny at FBR, and it's something that we've always got to take into consideration when the matter of prophecy comes up. Indeed, it even goes a little more deeper and more personal than that, because all of us basically, every single individual who lives, is basically an economist. Whether you be a businessman or a housewife or whatever, we all have to watch our pennies, don't we, and our dollars. We have to plan ahead on how we spend money for food, for clothing, for entertainment, for vacations or whatever. And you know, we've got to watch our pennies, our P's and Q's, so to speak. So in every way of looking at it, even in our own personal lives, financial matters are very, very important. So when you get down to it, maybe we are not professional economists, but we are all economists, because that is a part of life. It's a part of knowing what to do, how to plan things for the future. And money is a part of all of that, and economics based upon money. Let me tell you one thing about money right now. There's nothing wrong with money. It's just a means of exercising power. Money is power when you really look at it. It's power to buy groceries. It's power to have entertainment if you want it, or what you want. It's power to go places. It gives you the opportunity of doing things, you know, the exchange of goods or whatever. Supply and demand is usually through the medium of money. Money can be a route of all evil. If greed and all of the principles of evil, which you find in the Bible, that the Bible is against, is put into focus. But money can be good if it is able to be used for good purposes. And we think that what is happening at the Foundation for Biblical Research and getting out information to the people about the Bible, and we have to use money to be able to do that. And of course, we've got to watch our economic situation here at the Foundation very, very closely. All of these things are important, and money can be used for good, and money can be used for bad. It's a means of exchange, and it really what it is, it shows a type of power. It's how power can be transferred from one person to a next, to the next person, by the means of money. Now, this is quite true, and we all recognize it. Since every one of us have to get a paycheck every week, and we spend that paycheck every week, and keep our own house in order and all of that, money and economics and all of these things put together are very important to us as individuals. But on the world scene, it's very important to us as well, because the world is getting smaller all the time, isn't it? Now, I don't mean physically, but politically it is. And through means of telecommunications and all of that, and the ability to fly through by airplanes anywhere we want in a matter of hours these days, it shows how small the world really is getting, and what happens in one part of the world economically could very well have an effect upon us here in the United States or in Great Britain or wherever any of you are hearing this lecture. So what we need to do is to be concerned about world and regional economics, as well as our own personal economics in our homes. We need to be very concerned about that, and there are many verses in the Bible which tell us that that is what God expects of all of us. Well, let us look at some basic principles of economy, first of all. Now, once we understand them, then they might be able to help us comprehend even our own personal financial activities a little better. Now, economics basically centers around two factors of life. That is, a supply of needs so that we can maintain life, and the demand that we have for the maintenance of life. Supply and demand. You've probably heard of that before. Well, there are many concomitant subjects that affect these two factors. That's quite true, and I'm going to mention a few of them in a moment. But supply and demand are the things that really economics is concerned with. And the most important of all of those two, I should say, is supply. You know, you've got to have the goods or the products before someone can demand them. Or if you demand something and they are not available, well, then that's not very good to you. You've got to have the products to begin with. And that's why supply really is the most important. Before someone can demand goods or services, there must be something to demand. And this is very important. All right, let's come down to supply itself. Who is it that supplies to mankind the factors of life that allow us to live? Well, of course, we would say God, and that is absolutely true. God is the one who does it. He has given us an earth here, which is a very beautiful earth. If we could all learn to get along together on it and all of that, it has enough capabilities of supplying of food and other products to us, and shelter, whatever it may be, for many times the population that we have on earth today. If we have peace and security and all of that, and if people would learn to get along with one another. Unfortunately, that is not quite the case, as we know. In history, it's the biggest problem in economics is, other than one other factor, which I'm going to show you in a moment, the biggest problem is mankind trying to get along with each other. And that's always been the greatest difficulty. But as far as this supply is concerned, God is the one who supplies us the means by which to live. We've got to have food. We've got to have shelter. We've got to have all of the other things that go along with those. And we've got to have means of transportation of food, you know, or whatever, so that we might be able to have the things that we demand when we need them in order for us and our families to live. All right? Now, the great supplier is God, and the supplyee is the earth. That is, the earth is the one or the instrument by which we obtain supply. Mankind's supply of necessary things on which to live. Now, this may seem like a very simple illustration, and indeed it is, but it's important for us to know this, because one of the major factors connected with economy and why economists sometimes are not able to forecast what will happen in the future is because they're not able really to forecast what God might do in regard to the supply that He gives to mankind on this earth, the supply of food, the supply of other elements for shelter, etc., etc. It all comes down to this. Everything is centered on the production of food on the land or the sea. All of Earth's economy is founded on the ability of the Earth to provide food and shelter to the human race. And if we get a good supply of food and other commodities and things like that, then we are happy, aren't we? We can live out our allotted span of life and then die in a good old age, you know, and all of that, and then others can come along and do the same thing, and humanity then would be normally happy because we are fulfilling the role that God would want us to do. And what we really require on this earth is to have a happy existence while we're here for our 70, 80, 90, or how many years that we live. All right. Now, the thing is, though, that it is God who gives the supply of things. And the first factor is for the supply of production of food and other things to provide shelter for us is the weather. Is the weather. I'm talking about precipitation or the lack of precipitation or whatever it might be. In other words, a benevolent weather pattern upon nice land which can produce food or other things for our shelter is absolutely essential for a basic economy, a good economy, to exist. Too little precipitation on an area, which would be drought, can cause severe problems to an economy. If that economy, for example, is based upon crops that are being harvested or to be harvested in the particular area, and too little precipitation comes along, the crops can't be produced, basically, you know what's going to happen. You're going to have a lower standard of living as a result of that. However, sometimes you can have too much precipitation, and it can come along and wipe out crops that are being produced because of flooding or excess precipitation, whatever it might be. There are other factors of nature which can come in which are unexpected as far as we are concerned. We're all aware of Mount St. Helens, for example, of 2 years ago or so, blowing its top up there in southern Washington, the state of Washington. And that produced a great deal of material into the air which caused the sun's rays on certain areas of the world to be diminished for weather patterns. What has happened just from that volcano alone, and plus there have been others as well, that have put debris into the air which have clouded out some of the sun's rays and have caused a considerable drop in temperature, overall temperature for the Earth, particularly in certain areas of the northern hemisphere, I believe. Now, when I say considerable drop in temperature, I'm not talking about many degrees, just fractions of degrees will be able to influence the weather patterns on this Earth. I can tell you that for a fact because I used to be a meteorologist for the United States Air Force. That was going to be my profession for all of my life until I got interested in biblical matters about 30 years ago. And I can tell you for a fact that a fraction of a degree of temperature decrease overall, I mean, in the hemisphere, over the world, can have a profound effect upon weather patterns that we have here that give us our good weather or our bad weather, one or the other. Now, one of the main problems in forecasting a world economy is the lack of ability of humanity, to accurately forecast the weather. Now, we can do it maybe for a day, 2 or even 3 days in advance. There are some people who stick their necks out and say they can do it for a week. If they do it, they're lucky. They're very lucky, let me tell you. And to forecast what is going to happen 1 month from now, or a year, or 2 or 3 years, it's an impossibility, let me tell you for a fact. Unless God would give some special knowledge, and He hasn't been doing that lately to any of the forecasters I've been listening to. The thing is, who has control of the weather? It is God Almighty who does. He can cause benevolent weather. He can cause malevolent weather to occur in any area of the world. And a number of factors can cause all of these things. So the first thing we've got to understand in trying to be a good economist is, and if you want to be a good economist, you've also got to be a good weather forecaster. You've got to know in advance, many years in advance, if you want to be able to forecast accurately on economic matters, many years in advance, you've got to know again, many years in advance, what the weather will be in various parts of the world, because let me tell you, that is the number one factor for the production of food and other supplies which help us to have shelter, etc., etc., so that we can have a happy existence here on this earth. Now, as I said before, that is a very difficult problem for all of us to master, because God is the one who controls the weather, and we have only been able to control it in a temporary way and only on a local level, and certainly we have not been able to do it on a global scale at the present time. There's a second problem in understanding good economy for the future, and I mean in the matter of 6 months from now, or certainly a year, 2 or 3 years. And that has to do with politics, the politics that are occurring on the world today. That means what happens between men, the arguments that men or nations have with one another. Believe it or not, this is a very, very important factor in the determining of economic conditions. In fact, I shouldn't say believe it or not, I think all of us understand clearly that that is the case. How many of us can accurately forecast what is going to occur, let's say, in Afghanistan or in Poland in 6 months from now? You could go for a year and it'd be more difficult, wouldn't it? What is going to happen on the borders of China and the Soviet Union? And then we hear all the time here in the United States about what's happening in our Central American neighbors, I mean the countries down there. And we don't know exactly what is happening there. Even the war in the Falklands, for example, came up overnight almost. And before you know it, here were two major nations, Great Britain and Argentina, at war with one another. And you might say, well, that was at a remote area of the world. It certainly couldn't affect world economy. Well, let me tell you, if that would have gone on much longer, and if Britain would have been in more trouble, which thankfully, from my point of view, they came out of very well indeed, but their economic situation could have been deteriorated tremendously as a result of having to fight that war. That's just one example out of many. In fact, it did have an effect to some extent on Great Britain because of the war down there in the Falklands. But that is way down there, away from all of us, it seems like. But what about a war in the Middle East? Now, that is where the Bible has its focus on Middle Eastern nations. And here is little tiny Israel down there at the present time, which the influential Institute of Strategic Studies in London says is the fourth most powerful nation on earth today as far as making war is concerned. Here they are a very tiny nation, but what happens in the Middle East seems to affect all of us in the world, doesn't it? It may very well bring in the Soviet Union into a war with the United States, or with European countries, or African countries, or the whole Islamic world, you know, which is not only made up of Arabs, but people in India and Malaysia and southern Philippines and people like that. Since Jerusalem is the center of three main religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, what happens in that area of the world has a psychological and religious effect upon peoples all over the world. And the politics that we are in today, which can cause wars and all of that in one section of the world, can spill over into other sections that we don't even have an interest in, you would think. But yet, the world is getting smaller and smaller, and as a result of the instability of the world in certain regions, particularly in the Middle East, we are at some crossroads of knowing which way to go in these things. And the United States is involved, and the Soviet Union, Europe, and the rest of the nations of the world are involved in what is going on down there in the Middle East and in other areas of the world. So what we come down to is this second point, which is a very unpredictable thing for anyone. And that is, what is going to happen in the world in a political sense in the next 3 months, in the next 6 months, in a year, 2, 5 years? And I would say this, if a person could accurately predict those things, then he or she would be the finest economist that you could possibly imagine. Indeed, let me give you now the consequence of these two major factors I've been talking about here, which would have to do with supply and demand, or the disturbance of supply and demand and all of that. The consequence is this. The best economist is the one who can accurately predict what the weather and the politics will be like in 6 months, or a year, or 5, or 10, or 20 years. Now, that's the best economist, you see, is the one who can do that. Now, I want to say one thing right here and right now. There is no person alive who can do that accurately. And that includes Ernest L. Martin, and that includes you. I do not know precisely what the weather patterns will be another 10 years from now in the United States of America or any other place in the world. I am deficient in that knowledge, and so are you. You could go to the top people at the United States Weather Bureau in Washington, D.C., and they would also quite candidly tell you that they do not know what it will be like 5 years from now. In fact, they will be honest enough to tell you we don't know what it will be like in a year. And if they're lucky and are able to guess, shall we say, what it might be in 3 months from now, if they do get it, you know what they will tell you? They will say it's 99% guess and maybe 1% of art, which is another form of guessing when you really get down to it. And politics, how many of us know what is going to happen in any particular area of the world precisely, shall we say, in another 6 months from now, or a year, or 2 years? I do not know, and no one else knows. So to answer the question in the middle of this lecture, and I think I'll just answer it right now, so that we know where we stand on this matter. What's ahead for the economy? Let me tell you this. There is not a person living that can tell you accurately what will happen to the economy in the next 6 months to a year, and more precisely to a year or longer. Now, I will say this. There is hope. In actual fact, most of us can have a reasonable assurance that perhaps, now here's the perhaps coming in, that the weather patterns and the politics will remain rather stable between now and the next year. If that is the case, then we are in far better shape to predict some of the things that might be happening in the economy. If we can be assured, we can expect things to continue as we always have believed them to exist. But if there are going to be any major disturbances of any kind like that, let me tell you, Ronald Reagan, or the head of the World Bank, or it makes no difference who it is, Leonard Brezhnev, it makes no difference who in the world, cannot predict what will be happening 1 year from now. Now, I want to point out something in the middle of this lecture, since I've given the answer already. There is not a one of us who knows exactly what will happen. But look at the beauty of the whole thing. And this is where something good comes in to it. In my view, and since I am the director of the Foundation for Biblical Research, I think this is certainly important for my own personal life, and I've talked to members of the staff that we have here at the Foundation, and it's important to their lives, and I think it will be important to your lives. You who are listening to me, here's the important factor in all of this that we should understand. It means we ought to have a reliance on and a trust in and a willingness to be close to God Almighty through Jesus Christ. In other words, we should daily and weekly and monthly and yearly keep our minds in tune upon the principles of God, so that we might be able to learn lessons from these things, because I'll tell you, there is not a one of us that can be absolutely certain which way things will be going in the next few months or the next few years in front of us. However, in saying that, I am going to now give you some personal beliefs in which I think, because of study of the Bible, understanding past events throughout history, seeing what is occurring at the present time in the Middle East and in the world, and having a reasonable assurance, though I cannot say a precise one, because only God has that, but a reasonable assurance of what will be taking place in the next few years, I will give you my opinion on which way I think the economy in which we are in at the present will develop. And I think that it's a reasonable guess, and it's probably better than some that I've been hearing in the past. Now, of course, everyone's own theory has to be better than someone else's. You know, that's usually the case, so I'm laughing at that. And by the way, I just might tell you a joke on economists. At least it's my joke. If you want an economist to tell you one thing, and you want him to tell him, want him to tell you that, well, go and ask him and pay money and he will tell you what he feels will happen in the future for the next few years regarding your own financial problems that you might have or things that you want information on. Now, if he tells you something you're not satisfied with, then you go to another economist, and if he doesn't tell you, or she, what you're satisfied with, go to another or to another, and I'll tell you, though, you won't have to go very far till you'll find one that basically agrees with you. Now, the rest may not, but you'll find one that will agree with you. You know why? Because there are economists today of all different persuasions, some of them saying we're coming into the finest time you could possibly imagine economically in the next few years, and some colleagues of theirs at the same time, at the same place, saying we're going into the greatest depression and disaster that you could possibly imagine. And you've got all in between. That's what I'm trying to say. In other words, here's my joke that I have. There's only one profession I know that that knows far less about things that they ought to know than economists. And that profession is preachers. Now, that's my joke. But the point is, none of us, if you're certainly in the field of economics, can be absolutely certain of anything, and the best economist will come out and admit that, because there are just too many problems involved. And let me tell you one other thing that's a great difficulty. Not only the weather and the politics, but the psychology of people. You know, good economists have to know how people are thinking, and what keeps people happy and joyful, and what keeps them from panicking or whatever with their investments, with their money that they have. You know, most of the modern recessions, and certainly the depression of 1929 for the first, well, 5 years after that or whatever, that depression and most of our recessions have been brought on not necessarily by the weather or even politics. Yes, politics have come into it, and wars and things like that. That's quite true, and there have been embargoes on oil, etc. We all know that. But the main thing that has caused depressions and recessions in our modern world in the past 50 to 100 years has been panic of people who have, even on false reports, have taken their monies because they got scared and either took them out of one and put them in another, or did this or did that and put a run, let's say, on the stock market or whatever, when they, if they would really have used their heads, they would not have had to do it. This happens on a local level, it happens on a national level, it happens on an international level. That's just the way it is. And a good economist is able to forecast the psychology of peoples. But let me tell you, that is very difficult, isn't it? And there are other things, too, that are on psychology. Even the best countries or the best people with good intentions can make mistakes sometimes. You know, here is Mexico. We've been hearing a lot about Mexico lately. It owes an $80 billion debt. About $60 billion of it, I think, to banks around the world, and they have about a $20 billion private debt of some kind or another down there, equaling about $80 billion. That is a tremendous debt that they have. And they have, at the present time, no means of paying it, unless they get some credit from banks, and it looks like that they're going to be bailed out. But now, the Mexican economist, it wasn't all that bad of a guess that they made some 2 or 3 years ago. On the surface, you would think, they discovered huge reserves of oil down there, perhaps equaling almost that, or maybe more than that, of Saudi Arabia. The price of oil was very high at the time. It was in great demand at the time. And so they borrowed great quantities of money to be able to build pipelines and this and that and a whole number of other things down there. And then all of a sudden, there was an oil glut. People weren't buying as much oil because it was at a high price. And then there was so much oil on the market, no one was wanting to invest in oil in Mexico any longer. Or they couldn't get credit on their oil or whatever. And so they made a wrong guess. They thought that all that oil, which represents great wealth, and potentially it does, you know, they thought that they would carry right on and be able to sell it at a high price and have all this money coming in, and they'd pay off their debts and they would be living in high society. But it didn't work, did it? You see, even governments can make mistakes. And in fact, governments do make big mistakes. And there are other countries like Bolivia and Argentina and Brazil and other nations in Europe and various areas around the world who have borrowed great quantities of money, thinking full well that they would be able to pay it back because they would sell this or sell that or whatever, and the recession has come along, they can't sell it anymore, and they're practically going bankrupt. It is not that they planned it that way, it's that they didn't understand what was going to be happening in the next 6 months, next year, or next 2 years down the line. You see, this is a great difficulty too, and some people then begin to get worried, and they'll take their money out of a bank if they think it's going to go down, or they'll take their money out of a country if they think it's going down. And there was a great flight of dollars out of Mexico when it was found, you know, that the peso was in great difficulty. You see, these are problems that we all have to work with, and it's difficult to keep our minds on the whole global attitude of what is happening. That is why economists are making predictions on one side in one way and making them on the other in another way. And they're all types in between. Like I'm trying to say, it's very difficult for anyone to say exactly what's going to happen in the next few years economically. But I said a few moments ago, I'm going to give you my opinion based primarily as I see the biblical revelation as stating. For the next few years. I cannot set dates either. This is a major difficulty in the understanding of prophecy. But from my point of view, here is what I think will be happening in the next few years. It seems apparent to me that if we have no more Middle Eastern wars for a while, and that can't be absolutely guaranteed, and of course if our weather patterns continue well, and let's hope and pray to God, that's what we're supposed to do, that they will be fine for the United States or other areas of the world. If that does take place, then it is my personal belief that in early 1983, and certainly by the middle of 1983, we will be coming out of this world recession, certainly here in the United States, and what happens in the United States has a reflection or a spillover normally into other areas of the world. Now, this is my own personal belief. I also feel that the United States and other areas of the world, but particularly the United States, has a great economic resilience. Believe me, it does. We have in no way reached the potential of what we're able to produce and to show in economic strength. We in no way are we close to it yet. If we can have stability in this country and unanimity amongst our people and a feeling of wanting to get the job done, you know, and having the right weather patterns and all of these things and so forth and so on, and a relative stability in the world, I think there will be a turnaround in the economy in 1983. I think it will go on until 1984, and there is a potential for even boom times through the rest of the 1980s, up to about the end of the 1980s. This is my personal belief. Now, there's a reason for that. And the reason is because so many things have to take place in prophecy in the next few years, but the whole world has to have a knowledge, if I read the scripture correctly, it has to have a knowledge of basic Christianity, and the means are going to have to be made available for that to occur. It can come through various channels. I realize that. But the United States, along with other Western countries, are capable of getting out this message, and the people in it can do it. Some of the messages may not be completely compatible to the fullness of the teaching of Christ, but I'm talking about the biblical teaching. The overall teaching of Christ, I think, is going to be able to get across to the world in the next few years in advance of us, and I think there's going to have to be a strong economic basis for that to occur. There are other reasons for this, but I think that the 1980s, once we come out of this recession, will be good ones. Maybe toward the close, and certainly going into the 1990s, then people will begin to be more restless. I think that there's going to be a great return to religious fervor in the early 1990s, and particularly around 1995. I have a very definite reason for this. Do you know there are so many people in the world that are predicting through astrology, which I do not believe in at all, but it makes no difference whether you believe in it or not. There are millions and millions of people who believe in astrological forecast, and they're saying around 1994, 1995, near the end of this century, all types of things are going to be developing in the spiritual world, and that things are going to start coming to a head. They are talking about natural disasters and things like that taking place at that time. Now, what if these things did coincide together? Natural disasters with an expectation of religious fervor and a new revolutionary type of concepts for the future, you know, a one worldism and things like that. I think this will begin to gain momentum in the early part of the 1990s and through the middle part. And I think in Christianity itself, there's going to be a great interest in prophecy about that time. Because you see, when people begin to think something is going to happen, believe it or not, in history, and I'm going to write an exposition on this one of these days to prove this, in history, the things that are normally thought that will take place usually take place, perhaps in a modified way, but it's most amazing how that occurs. I think I know the reason for it. You know, people who are superstitious about a black cat going in front of their car or something like that, do you know, to me, it doesn't mean anything in the world. I just keep right on going. Doesn't even faze me. But a person who is really superstitious and says, oh, something will happen. Do you know that person all of a sudden is dangerous to be on the road? Because he or she now says, something's going to happen, something's going to happen. They get tense, they get psychologically upset. And you know, they are more prone to an accident if they're believing something will happen than if they say, oh, it doesn't make any difference at all. See the point? In the 1990s, there are so many things happening in the astrological world, in the Christian biblical world, whether it be true or not. Things are happening there, or will be, which people will think are very, very indicative of end-time events. This is the 1990s. And many others throughout the world that don't even have religious persuasions as we do are thinking that the 1990s may be something very special for this world. If we would have an economic depression at that time, along with, let's say, natural disasters that might come along, plus this feeling that something big is going to happen, I'll tell you, we are going to be at that time in an environment of revolution. And by revolution, it may be political. Yes, it could be that. It could involve the military. Yes, it could be that. I know one thing that will happen. The Bible says, step by step, there's going to be a power arrive in the Middle East, which step by step will encroach upon all areas of the world, and finally there's going to be an anti-Christian system stemming out of the Middle East, which will embrace the entirety of this world and bring in world peace that people will have been wanting for a long time. In other words, a stable economic situation, stable political situation. Wouldn't it be nice if we could see that happening? Well, it's going to happen one of these days before Jesus Christ comes back to this earth. Now, the book of Revelation speaks that before this time of great peace comes on the world, when the Antichrist establishes his system over there on the earth, there will be great wars and difficulties and problems all over this world. Now, that is a fact. It could and probably will involve the United States, the Soviet Union, China, and other areas. But what is going to happen, I don't know if this is going to be in the middle 1990s when that occurs. It could be. I'm thinking the 1990s, however, will be a time of revolution and turmoil and disturbance and difficulties and all of that. It looks very probable to me. But what happens after that time is, if it goes on for any longer and Christ does not come by that time, and in actual fact he could be here on this earth before the 21st century comes. That's quite true. I'm not sure that he will be, but he could be. But I do know this. There are going to be times of difficulty and times of trouble. And the Bible says there are going to be birth pangs occurring on this earth before the anti-Christian system comes in, and it will lead up to the establishment of the anti-Christian system. And in fact, what will occur is that most of the world, after going through great turmoil and difficulties, just before, not long before the second coming of Christ, will finally come to say, we need a one-world government, we need one man who's benevolent to tell us what to do, and they will agree It looks very plainly to me in the Bible. They will agree to give their power to a man who will reign in Jerusalem, and he will have 10 nations associated with him in the Middle East, and they will reach out and control the entirety of this world, and it will last for 3.5 years. The Bible says, though, at the end of that 3.5 years, the 10 nations that support this Antichrist, called the son of perdition, the man of sin, or sometimes called the beast, they will turn on him, and then his kingdom or his empire will begin to crumble, and then is when Jesus Christ and his angels come back from heaven and establishes the true kingdom of God here on this earth. So we are to expect great turmoil and difficulties around the world, and it may involve even wars here in the United States. That's quite true, before the anti-Christian system is set up. But if you want my own opinion, and that's what I'm giving you now, it is this. That system cannot arise within the next 3, 5, or even 10 years. I think it could begin to arise in the 1990s. In my own personal, it's my own personal opinion that we will come out of the recession that we're in right now sometime in 1983. It could go on a little bit longer, because to get people back to work and start housing and things like that, it usually takes a little longer, so it could go into 1984. But the potential for the United States to redound and come back to a high economic level, which we are right now, but I mean for all the population generally, I think definitely is a possibility. And Mr. Kahn, for example, one of the great economists in this world, has suggested that the 1980s, and he is saying this all over the place, it seems like, I mean in various areas of the United States, that he sees the 1980s as a time of great prosperity if things go in the normal way that people might expect. I feel the same way. I think that this may be a time right here when the economy will begin to come back. I'm talking about next year in 1983 going into 1984. Now, I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But there's going to be a time, I think, of prosperity before the great Holocaust, near the end of the age which introduces the Antichrist system, which will then be a time of peace and security and blessing and joy for 3.5 years. But before that happens, there's going to be a Holocaust. But I think that's down the line a little bit. I believe it will go into the 1990s at the earliest. This is the opinion of Ernest L. Martin. That's all I can say. It may be true, it may not be true. I am not one ordained of God to give you by divine fiat what the next few years are going to bring. God has not given me that commission, nor has he given me that ability. I do feel, however, that for the past 30 years of working in the biblical revelation and trying to understand the history of nations of the past and looking at the contemporary environment in which we are in from a political, economic, and social point of view, I think that if matters stay pretty calm for the next few years in the Middle East in particular, and if the weather patterns continue to be normal and benevolent, and who knows what will happen there, but if they do, I think we're coming into a time of greater prosperity in the United States and in the Western world in the next few years ahead of us.